thank you for changing the subject. Yeah, I'm very glad.
God, you're adorable, Kiki.
I'm super KO right now.
But both of you? Oh, shit.
Let's have a sleepy... Let's have a sleepy...
yeah, Flaky. Episode. Flaky, what time is it by you?
11 p.m.
I'm the only one who has normal daylight hours. God damn it, I'm sorry. It's 3 p.m.
Yeah, and for it's you, like... Yeah. And it's 7 a.m. in Australia.
Ugh.
Ugh. Yeah. Good day. No, but I just slept. I did not sleep good.
Well, if I was there, I'd sing you a lullaby.
Being awake at 8 a.m. is reasonable, but not if you were like awake until 4 a.m. I think.
Yeah, I know the feeling. And then my crazy ass Australian friends want to kidnap me and like, we're going to go for a night on the town, which in Australia means you go to a bar, start drinking to warm up, then go out for food, and then go out to a proper bar afterwards to get shit-faced again.
Yeah, that's pretty normal. That's not only Australian. That's like, that's what you're doing on a good evening. If you're deciding to get a party in the city.
If you're German.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand starting out at a restaurant that has alcohol as well and having some drinks with your meal, but
Bailey's Irish Cream.
Pre-drinking yourself and then eating and then drinking again seems a bit silly.
Yeah, that's kind of counterintuitive. Like, you don't drink then eat, like, unless you're suddenly really sick because you drank so much.
Yeah, but, you know, Australia, you can't accuse them of having logic.
Breakfast beers. Beers for breakfast.
Actually beers like breakfast stout, and I'm always wondering, like, is that really a stout you're like drinking for breakfast?
Oh my god.
It is today.
Oh my god. These crazy ass Australians, they got me so drunky, Griff. Oh god. I was out at Furry Down Under and having a room party. So I decided to take my raspberry-flavored vodka and add about a fifth of real vodka to it, because fuck raspberry-flavored vodka, it's for pussies. And then I added some Australian lemonade to that and mixed it up to make a very tasty beverage. Had one glass of this, and then we all decided in our infinite wisdom that we're going to walk to Macca's. So,
is Macca's their variant of like 7-Eleven?
It's what they call McDonald's.
Oh.
So, we go out for a walk, and my God, I was all over the place. They were dying laughing. I'm such a cheap fucking date. Oh my God.
Our little lightweight Griffin. Oh, I bet Juco could drink you under the table storm.
It's very interesting that the Australians are calling McDonald's Macca's, because it's the same thing we're doing in Germany. So seems like we adapted that from the Australians.
We call it Mickey D's. Like,
yes, that's
annoying white people.
Yeah. The London people are doing that too, as far as I can remember.
But when you are shit-faced drunk and the floor is moving and you're laughing at the world, there's nothing better than walking into McDonald's and attempting to order food, only to have the lady behind the counter drunk translate what you ordered into something you did not expect and still have it taste amazingly good because it's greasy as hell.
Because you're drunk, yeah. And anything tastes good at that point.
Drunk fast food is amazing.
The last time I got properly shit-faced, like actually drank to the point the world was spinning physically faster than I'm used to, it was like it was in celebration of getting my EMT certification. We went up to a city here in the Salt Lake area called Park City. They're known for Sundance. And we spent the night at a timeshare there and went bar hopping. And by like bar number three, we were so shitty that like we ended up circling back to the first bar we were at and forgetting we'd ever been to any of the other bars.
Oh my, I can't even remember when I was shit-faced like that the last time. It was somewhere when I was a teenager, I think. Because since then, I can't even drink enough to get, like, super shit-faced because I would just fall asleep beforehand, I think. Or I would just stop because I can't drink anymore. So like my body says, no.
So Fleeky's the oldest among us. He goes to bed when he gets tired and alcohol. Can you imagine a picture of us, of all three of us being drunk birds? That would be hilarious.
Yeah, pretty soon people won't have to picture it. We'll be doing it at conventions, right? Right? Yeah. Right?
AndrewCon 2018.
That's right. And the question will be, how little alcohol does it take to make drunk walk into a wall? We must find out.
To make drunk what walk into a wall?
Drunky Griff walk into a wall.
Oh, that's not hard. I just spin you around a little bit more. And give you a little push.
Spin the Griffin.
I love you both so much. Otherwise, you'd become maimed by now.
And on that note, this is episode 29 of Bird Life. I'm Cor.
I'm Fleet.
And I'm Stormy, because I love it being in Australia.
That is his new persona name. He's changing his Twitter Stormy. Handle and Telegram handle to Stormy Griffin.
Yeah.
Just like it, you're Fleeky and Core, you're just...
I'm just Corey. No.
Yeah, you're ignoring the S. My name is practically a plural.
Fleeksy.
It must be Fleeksy.
All right, Fleeksy. Oh, but I don't know. Fleeky's pretty. Fleeky's cute.
So, too, what's the plural of fleeks? Fleekses? Fleeksies? Fleeksi?
There's no plural. There's no plural because there's only one of me.
Fleeksen.
Like water.
That's what you think. You have a clone to meet later today.
If I took that logic, we'd have to call you Corey. And Corey's just weird, Core. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Don't strike me as a Corey.
Damn it.
I actually really like Irish names like Corey and
it's Irish.
Aaron. And yeah, I think Corey is an Irish name.
Huh.
Yep.
Today I learned.
Yeah.
So
crazy.
Before we get into the more meat of this episode, Fleeks, I believe you have something for one of our patrons.
You said you have a song prepared.
I said I had one as a backup in case you couldn't do yours.
Oh, I got it wrong. I got it wrong.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, Fleeks.
So that's what I thought. So, yeah, okay, if you want. Okay.
So, Fleeks, so this is yet another example of Fleeks.
Else I would have prepared one.
This
is another example of Fleeks.
To quote... I said, if you can't come up with a song by next episode, don't worry, I got one. And I was there for your backup. There was nothing unclear about that.
And I didn't even hear the part about Core offering to be your backup, so I mean, this is... But I know there's audio evidence proving you.
So then back me up. No,
I kind of don't want to.
What?
I kind of don't want to because you didn't even... It's not even that you forgot or anything. You're just like, oh, well, I'll let him do it anyways. Yeah, Moriar, you deserve better than this.
Welcome to Bird.life, where Core does 90% of the background work, freaks, squawks pretty, and I just sit there and am a griffin.
Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray my food, my fridge will keep fresh. A crow might be a scavenger, sharing a meal with the ravenger, but that don't make it savager than any of the corvid challenger. See, a crow's a lot more sophisticated than a canary is domesticated, and significantly less incarcerated like a blue jay is discriminated. A raptor's prey is eviscerated, sometimes even emasculated. They like feeling exhilarated by the fear of the intimidated, but the corvids are more illuminated. They enjoy watching you be manipulated. They'll make you look debilitated. No, cross them or be humiliated. They're not afraid to be opinionated, especially when intoxicated, or maybe some of the form of inebriated. We'll talk circles around the uneducated. Now, my song isn't too complicated, but I gotta end it or be asphyxiated. My brain's starting to feel deoxygenated, but I hope my picture is well illustrated, like a concert is well orchestrated. My satisfaction can't be overstated. My fellow corvids calculated support. A crow might be a scavenger, but that don't make it savager. Still equally qualified to be a manager. Want to tell Moriar to keep flapping her wings. Thank you, Moriar, for supporting the show. We really appreciate it.
That was actually pretty damn good.
So you're telling me if I would have come up with a song, I would have missed out on that.
Fleeksy. So now, Fleeksy, you just got to show us what you got. Simple as that.
You got to one-up me, man. You got to.
All right, next week, here on Bird.life, next episode, Fleeksy's going to one-up Core. We're having a throwdown.
No, the next Patreon donator.
Yeah. I kind of feel like, I don't know what I feel like I'm in a rap battle with Core, but we have time to think about it, you know what I mean? I have time to think
about it. The world's slowest rap battle.
Yeah, I can't be impromptu, very well. I can do, like, limericks, like, you know, maybe four lines, but not like that.
I can sing songs and compose songs spontaneously and, do it like that, but mostly in German. So I can make you a German poem from scrap in past few seconds. But in English, it's another thing, you know what I mean? Because rhymes and stuff and this. But yeah, if I have some time to write something, I will just. The next Patreon gets me. So donate, pledge, get a song from me. Yeah, it's worth it. I hope.
And we're here to enforce that this time. Fleeks.
Yes.
Flaky Fleeks.
But unfortunately, the next patron gets that, and the patron after that, I got to do something. So, by all means, if you want to torture me, sign up today.
Yeah, technically, the last patron, Juco, was supposed to be Storm's turn, but Juco really, 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 really emphasized that he did not want us to sing about him. So, he enforced them to do the actual anthem fucking finally as well.
But still, since when are we are listening to Juku? That was like the last, I thought the same thing the last time, but I did not say it, but really? Yeah, today we're still talking about love and birds and bird love and stuff. So
difference is, last week we kind of talked about, you know, the introduction, you know, how to talk to people, how to engage in the hookup culture kind of thing, and kind of go from there. This week we're talking about actual relationships, which is something that a couple of us have current practical experience with, and, you know, the third person can still contribute in some way, I'm sure.
Oh, we love you, Fleeky.
Oh, man. Regardless, so this is about, you know, what you do in your relationship to, you know, keep it going well, to keep things, you know, if you care about someone, you want, you know, the whole experience to continue to run smoothly, right? Maybe?
Yeah.
Is anybody there? Hello?
No. Having a relationship that runs something similar to, like, a government is totally what everyone's craving for, because dysfunction's all where it's at.
I just want that fascism, like, all up in my relationship, you know? Like, I just want to be stomped, basically. That's actually a fetish. God damn it, that doesn't work.
So you want to be Donald Trumped?
No, that's not fascism. That is, I think there's even a subreddit, late stage capitalism. Where all of anything that I have ever produced ever is being sold without my consent.
So what's yours is mine, and what's mine is mine.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so aside from correlating relationships with bodies of government, Storm, tell us a little bit about your relationship. How do you keep things going? You've been together for 10 years at this point, right?
Yes, I have been together with my primary mate, Drezel, for almost 11 years now. That is correct.
And you say primary mate, and I think you've alluded to this in the past. I've never actually bothered to ask, though. Do you have side dragons? What goes on there?
Oh, totally.
Side dragons. Nice.
I just can't get enough. Sorry. I just can't get enough of that dragon love, let me tell you. No, I actually am a poly at heart, so I will have a primary partner, and then I have additional partners thereof.
Okay. So, and you just kind of swap them out intermittently as, you know, their expiration day gets closer.
Yeah, totally. We'll go with that.
Every single one of Storm's previous partners, I just slapped in the face. I'm kind of sorry, but at the same time, it was fun.
A lot of them reach something akin to like a friends with benefits status, where you have to be really good close friends to reach a more intimate love status. But even with that, the way that Drezel and I's dynamic still works is that while the others can get close, you can get intimate, you can be very loving and caring with them, the person that I will still lay next to over the majority of the time and call every day, etc., well, there's only one person at the moment for that, and that's Drezel. Going back to the normal side of things, let's see. What do you want to know about our relationship dynamic specifically? Ask me a more pointed question.
So what is something that you guys have done, you know, pretty much throughout the entirety of your relationship? What is one thing that has always kind of been a stable fact of your relationship that's kept you together?
Had lots of sex.
Okay.
Okay, in all seriousness, well, that is true, by the way, but
no, I believe it. Yeah,
what actually has worked is we strived from day one to be honest with each other and had full communication, full disclosure. That's not to say we're mean or disrespectful of each other's feelings, but when the moment allows, when we're private, etc., we always would sit each other down and review how things went, how the day went, how a social gathering went, and how each other did. And if there's something we didn't like with how the other person conducted themselves, we told them right then and there. And I think that was critical to establishing respect and trust. Another thing that happened young in the relationship is we had quite a few tests, including an incident where cheating was involved. And I think it actually made us stronger in the long run because it revealed some foundation cracks in the relationship that we were able to overcome by being honest with each other and allowed trust to not only be reestablished over time, but it allowed it to
Were lies and deceit part of the incident with the cheating? Is that kind of the lesson learned from that? Or was it kind of something that happened and you still remained honest?
Well, when he did it was more so in the long run upon reflecting. It was more so needs not being met and feeling like one person got everything they wanted and the other person didn't get anything they wanted in terms of the needs dynamic and respect. And yes, there was some lying and such to cover it up, but the truth did come out. And in the long run, for reasons I just mentioned, the relationship's far stronger today than it's ever been. And I have rock solid faith in Drezel, I have no worries that he's going to pull a similar stunt. Plus,
that is just, that's really intense and really cool. I just kind of want to interject with that, because, like, you don't find that even in polyamory relationships where, you know, there are multiple partners in going out, in coming out, going, however you have it going. It, when there's, when the trust is broken, 90% of the time the relationship's over at that point. And whether it's, you know, finalized and wrapped up in that moment, or whether they try to proceed, most of the time they're doomed to fail if the trust gets broken. So
right.
The fact you were able to overcome that broken trust and reestablish the foundation, that shows an incredible amount of maturity on both of your parts and a lot of love, frankly. If you don't really, really love someone and you experience the, you know, you they're caught or you're caught in a cheating scenario, and you don't come back from that most of the time.
Right. And I think in many cheating scenarios for other couples, the issue, something caused the cheating to happen. Now, there are some people that, you know, they just, they weren't trustworthy to begin with, and they would have just done whatever the hell they wanted to do. Others, they were more wanting to be in an open relationship, but the other partner wanted to be closed, which is a sign of incompatibility.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in my dynamic, we were able to talk it out and lay out ground rules and grow our bond closer. So that's what allowed us to keep moving forward. And another thing that allows us to still be together after 10 years, going on 11 now, is the fact we have just the right mix of having enough in common to be bonded, whereas being different enough in other aspects to always be interesting.
You're not the same personality by any means. You got hints and flavors of each other, but you guys are contrasting in a very good way.
And that's changed with time as well. He's picked up some of my token aspects, and I've picked up some of his token aspects. Your partner will change you. It always will, especially in the best of relationships. And I always joke with people that are into, say, hardcore gaming and such, that if you like aspects of me but feel that I don't scratch all of your itches, just talk to my sidekick Drezel, because he'll scratch all those itches, and between the both of us you get a package deal.
Well, alrighty then. One other thing you mentioned was honesty. And
yes.
Okay, so I'm gonna be very straightforward here. I used to not be a very honest person. Not even but, you know, just a handful of years ago. A relationship I was in, I never cheated, but I was young and stupid and very self-absorbed, so I wasn't honest about everything. I had, you know, I kept secrets, I kept things hidden from my partner, and regardless of the fact of, you know, how major or minor that is, you know, if you're not honest and if you're not upfront with your partner, it doesn't matter if it's something significant like cheating or if it's something, you know, just irresponsible. If there's no trust in the relationship, it'll kill it faster than anything else. The right. moment that trust is broken, it's pretty much over, usually.
Right. And the thing about lying in general, and this isn't just, you know, with relationship, this can be among good friends and whatnot. When you tell a lie, and then you tell a lie, and then you tell a lie, and then you tell a lie, what you're going to find out is you got to keep track of all these lies. And eventually, you're going to forget you told a lie about something, and you're going to screw yourself up, and the lie will end up falling apart, and people are going to start to question you, and eventually your partner is going to wonder if you're lying, and that's when all hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
So you're far better off in the long run. Just
even just little white lies, even if it's right. even if it's just something dumb or stupid, and just to give out an example or something, like, because it's a trend, I like pineapples on pizza. Well, you better be prepared to actually like pineapples on your pizza at that point. Otherwise, right. yeah. you know, that lie is going to raise questions further down the line.
Well, I like to use an example that society makes fun of, but you know, if you ever see a joke on TV, you know, the guy and the girl are a couple, husband, wife, etc. The girl asks the guy, "Hey, did these jeans make my butt look big?"
Right.
Well, in my dynamic, I would tell her, "Yeah, they do. You might want to get a different pair because people are going to think you got a gigantic badonkadonk." But that's because I'm to the point with Drezel that I can tell him this honestly, and he would be able to appreciate that honest feedback and react accordingly. Because after all, if we can't count on our partner to be able to tell us the actual truth of what they see, then who can you count on?
Who else are you going to want to hear it from? Right, it would be embarrassing and humiliating to have a stranger or even, you know, a friend say, "Why the hell are you wearing those pants, dude? They're not doing your ass any favors." You'd want to go home and change your pants right then and there.
Bingo.
And
so many people don't think of it that way.
There is also another twist to that. Now, let's say those jeans do make her ass look big, but it's a good thing. You don't say no, you say, "Damn, yeah, they do. Hell yeah."
Yes, exactly. And then you would reassure her that, "Oh, no, no, not only do they do it in such a great way. It enhances the way you look. It enhances your beauty. You can run with it that way, too, naturally." Mm-hmm. And another reason I would like to think that Drez and I are still together is, even though we've been together this long, we don't hesitate in complimenting each other or sending a kind word every day. People sort of get in a routine and then forget the amount of effort they put into to lure their partner to prove that they were the one. So I still will get cards all the time. I'll get chocolates. I'll take them out to dinner, vice versa. We'll send all kinds of lovey-dovey, chirpy BBM messages or texts back and forth during the day. And yes, you know, if you guys have heard me on the show and you've heard how mushy I can be at times, yeah, just up that by about 5, and that's how I can be to my mate. And that's just the kind of person I am. And I love doing it. It comes naturally, but I also consider it almost like a form of investment in the relationship because, yes, the feelings are there and he knows and I know how much we care for each other, but still just putting it into verbal form, putting it into text form can really make all the difference when you're having an especially bad day at work or dealing with family or something like that.
Yeah, you get to pull up that message and kind of have just a bit of a refresher.
Bingo.
Fleeks.
Yeah.
We've kind of dominated the radio waves for a minute here.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Ask away, Cor.
Well, just kind of open floor. What, you know, what's been successful in your past relationships? What's damned you? What have you learned?
Since they are all ended in bad ways, I think they weren't that successful. But I at least the thing I always think is, like, if you have, like, overwhelming feelings, you should be reasonable, but also, let me rephrase it. I can tell you about my last ex-girlfriend, and we, like, met in a German furry forum.
Right.
We talked a lot together, and it was, like, awesome to talk to her, and, yeah, it just came together. We met at a con. And from there on, we fell totally in love. Like, oh my god, it was really amazing because she was exactly my type and stuff like that. And we had the same humor and same interests and stuff like that. That's a thing that can really, it just made being we were. Even we had the same idea of sexuality. She was, like, not that kind of girl that, like, gets migraine regularly, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Or stuff. And Yeah, we were very open-minded. Yeah, we were furries, you know, some kind of. You can, yeah, if you know what I mean. And yeah, it was pretty much perfect. And yeah, the point is, we moved together 6 months after we had after we started a relationship, you know.
Right.
And yeah, it worked pretty much perfectly for about 3 to 4 years. I mean, you had your problem and stuff, but what I want to say is that I think and laugh. You can't think too much with your head and with what could happen. Oh, this. So sometimes you like have to risk something, especially if your girlfriend friend lives like 400 to 500 kilometers away from you, and that's like the only way to regularly see her or something like that. You know what I mean?
Is to move in together?
I don't say everybody should move in together.
No, I'm just saying, is that what happened?
Yeah, we moved in together.
But you live you live 300 or 400 miles away apart, you know, otherwise, before you moved in.
Yeah, before we moved
in. Now, Fleeks, question for you. How long did you two date, get to know each other, etc., before the decision was made to try living together to see how that would work?
Actually, I'm a very about I act more towards what my gut tells me. You know, I have a lot of my gut instincts are really dominant, and actually we talked on the first day we first met us about it, because we were like, hey, we are living like 500 kilometers away from each other. Ooh.
So you chatted online, you met at a convention, and at this convention you guys talked about moving in together.
Yeah, and even before that in chat, and so because we thought about it, it wasn't something like we thought like we would do that in 6 months after that, but it just happened, because the other thing was, she was very unhappy there where she lived. She lived in Rheinland-Pfalz, that's a state. She lived in a very kind of remote town called Bitburg, and it was not a nice town or somewhere where somebody wants to live. And she was like, hey, come on, move together. Let's move together. Everything is better than this shit town. You know what I mean?
Right. Okay,
and then we made it and we were successful.
So here's the thing about moving in together, because there's a couple elements to it. One, the act of moving in together itself is generally not very scary or very difficult in the first place. You two, you know, you have a fondness for each other, you love each other, you want to move in together, and you want to give it a shot. That's not scary, and that's not difficult of a decision to come to. It's not difficult to move in together physically at all. But once you are in constant exposure to each other, you know, 8 to 16 hours a day, basically.
Yeah.
That's where things do get difficult, because you have to start, you're starting to figure out the, you know, finer points and finer details of your partner. They're learning about you as well. And that's kind of where the incompatibilities, you know, start to kind of come together. That's one of the things that happened in the previous relationship that I mentioned. We moved in together relatively early on. I think we were approaching a year. And after a certain point, I felt like I wasn't myself anymore. I couldn't be myself. Like, all of the things that I enjoyed doing and all of my little hobbies and passions, she kind of scoured upon. Like, she was like, well, that's dumb. And she kind of didn't like my friends. So, you know, she pulled me away from my friends. And then as time went on, she, you know, I just kind of started not liking each other as much. You know, there was still love, but there wasn't a whole lot of light going on. And we started to feed off of each other's insecurities. And that's how that ended. It was not healthy and it was not good. We ended probably about as peacefully as we could have.
That's something really. I had before that, I had a few relationships really, and they all were pretty much like that. But the last one was like that. It was like we were living together, and we were in addition to each other, and had we had the same hobbies. We played PlayStation together, co-op games. She was a game. Yeah, she loved to game, and we laughed about the same stupid things. I mean, of course, we explored our negative sides, and in the end, it was also what made it break after, 5 years. I don't want to go into details because a few people know who my ex is, of course, and I don't want to make her bad or myself too bad.
You know, either of you are bad people. It's just compatibility-wise, you weren't.
That wasn't nice.
All right, but I've got a question, and this is for both of you. And I'll start with you, Fleeks, but Core, I want your input on this as well. At what point in time is it truly appropriate to move in? Then you kind of touched on it, but you didn't give me a direct answer. And the reason why I ask is I waited 4 years with Drez before we decided we were ready to get a place. And I guess this figure varies for each person because, yeah, when you move in together, that's when you're going to see, you know, the good, the bad, when they're sick, when they're happy, when they're farting in the toilet. I mean, you see it all. And sometimes, unless the relationship's gotten to a certain point where it's seasoned enough to be ready for that, moving in can almost cause some incompatibilities.
There isn't a valid answer, I think, because if you're moving together and if you don't fit together, if you notice that, it's never too early or too late, because if you're not compatible, then you're like, I don't know, you can find out after 4 years of relationship or after 6 months of relationship. I mean, you can get more sure about it when you let time go. Like if you're together after 4 years without moving together, I think there's a high chance that you can live together actually.
Yeah.
But generally, I think there is no really valid answer. You can be lucky and get very happy after only. If you like moving in directly after the first date or something, but you can also get super unhappy with your partner after 10 years of a relationship, I would say.
It's true.
Okay.
It's difficult. You know, I obviously would not recommend moving in with your partner after, you know, one or two dates. It happens. frankly, you spend time together, you look for your compatibilities, and if things are moving in a direction where it's appropriate to move in with each other, that's when you do. My hyena and I, we've discussed it quite a bit, that we do want to move in together. And frankly, like, you know, I think we would have moved in together and gotten a place together a little while ago if there weren't for, you know, a few issues on my end with, well, just family stuff going on, but that's some personal reasons on my end, basically. You follow your feeling on that one, and honestly, you know, there's nothing wrong with moving in after, you know, 4 to 6 months. That's fine. Like, if you guys feel that that's right, and you've had enough exposure that you would feel comfortable, give it a try.
Yeah.
One way or another, you're going to learn whether you're compatible or not, and it doesn't hurt to find out sooner than later either.
I mean, even if you're like moving together, it isn't like you're forced to live together forever or something. There's always the chance that one can move out again and stuff. That's always the thing.
So let's talk about the little things. Oh, sorry, Storm. Did you have one more bit?
No, I mean, I'm just agreeing with you guys because, I mean, there's been people that have been married for 50 years that decided to split. So there is.
Usually, when it's at the 50-year mark, it's pretty mutual as far as I've seen. They're like, yeah, we spent 50 years together, and don't get me wrong, I love him to bits, but I kind of want to see what's out there while I'm still young and fresh. And you're just like, honey, and you're not young and fresh anymore, but do you?
I hear taking my dentures out is all the rage.
I've been reading online, and there's so many new things I want to try, and he's just not experimental enough. Anyways, besides these weird cliches that we're going down, yeah, like, okay. I want to give an example of, like, a little thing that I enjoy doing, like, in a relationship that, just the things that make it fun, you know? One of my favorite things to do with my hyena is, like, you know, she gets home from work, it's been a long day for her. I like to pop her bra off, obviously, you know, but I don't go straight for the boobs. What I do is I will, like, scratch that spot where the bra hook is on her back and then around under her arms as well, because that's where, like, all of that tension and, you know, compression's happening. It's itchy as hell. And you scratch that spot on her back and she just melts. And it's the cutest thing in the world to see. Is that weird to say?
No, it's not. And it's actually a very loving thing to do.
So, in your guys' relationships, what kind of little gestures did you do that just kind of made the day or saved the world or whatever?
I had some idea. I did a lot of stuff, but one day I started to draw a little, because my ex-girlfriend was a hyena too, and I draw hyenas and put them on little post-its, you know. I drew hyenas, and then I put them on her keyboard, like in the thing, and I made that for a time, so stuff like that, and she was happy about that.
Did she ever make hyena butter jokes?
Of course.
Okay.
Hyena butter jelly time.
Oh my god.
Oh jeez.
No, actually that was my joke. I made a lot of hyena butter jokes.
Oh god.
And she teach me what hyena butter is, and she also teach me about the anatomy of female hyenas, and she also teach me a bit. She was very, very like if people put that spotted hyena anatomy on striped hyenas, she was like, you can't do that.
There's a lot of pride among them, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, she was spotted hyena from species, and she was really into hyenas, and I learned so much. Oh god.
Storm, what about you? What about little gestures that you and Drizzle do?
Well, I'll start from what Drizzle does for me. Give you some perspective. Drizzle is an artist as well as a writer, as well as a gamer. But for the first two things, what he loves to do is he likes to draw me things. He'll draw us together, and he'll draw little doodles of Storm, and he puts them everywhere. On his lunch pail, on his water bottles, anytime there's a reminder sticky, there's a sticker, there's a little doodle of Storm speaking or something. So there's like Storm all over my nest, all over the place. It's hilarious. Which I find absolutely awesome. Another thing that he does is we already touched on a little bit in terms of just the kind gestures back and forth, but sometimes we'll help each other with our shoes. Just a nice little gesture, putting them on before work, just showing, hey, you know, helping you with the day. Yeah. What I've been known to do is I'll pack lunch, or I'll go and right before his lunch break, I'll cook something at home. I'll drive over to his work, and when he goes out to his car, instead of seeing his lunch plate sitting in his lunch pail sitting there, he'll see a freshly cooked meal sitting on the floor of the car. So
you're the cook of the family.
Yeah, I can make some interesting things in the kitchen when I feel up for it.
Right on.
Yeah, that's actually where I wanted to go now. Like, you know, the saying that the way to somebody's heart is through their stomach. And who in your relationship cooks? And yeah, Storm already answered that. And to answer it for my own, that because I thought about it. One thing I always did, I was the one who cooked every night when she came home from evening school, or I don't know what the proper term is in English, but from the late school. I prepared food. That was like my thing to do always. Food. Yeah, because I'm a passionate cook and I really love cooking.
I think this is the podcast of cooks, because I'm also the one who cooks in the relationship primarily. Sometimes, like most of the time, I think my meals turn out really well, but sometimes they get kind of experimental and they don't turn out so well. Very good at cooking stuffed mushrooms with bacon. Tried to make stuffed mushrooms with crab once, and that was just the worst. She still doesn't let me live that down. Yeah.
At least you were willing to try.
Yeah. I steal a lot of recipes straight from Joe's Crab Shack. They're steam pots. I love seafood, man. Like, I love seafood so much. So I really love cooking, and I love cooking for her too. She doesn't cook, like, to my knowledge at all. All I see in her kitchen are not processed foods, but like, you know, canned soups, some prepackaged dinners, a lot of frozen vegetables, and that's kind of like her circulation when I'm not around. So it also gives me a little bit of pride that I'm the one she's getting most of her nutrients from, I guess.
Yeah. Especially in the start of the relationship, I tried so many recipes from the internet, and then I started to create my own stuff, especially because for 2 years we actually went vegan, because why not?
God.
Oh my goodness gracious!
That so much experience for cooking and stuff. It was, I had to improvise so much, and I tried to make my own substitutes and stuff, and it worked out pretty good. And I created, I think I could write my own vegan cookbook.
Being in the kitchen, I've got to be in the mood for it. I'll make things every day, but I've got to be in the mood to really bust out all the pans and just go to town, because it's very much a labor of love, and unless I'm in the mood to love it, it's just tedious as all fucking hell to me.
Aww.
So I I'm not quite like you guys where you can go in the kitchen, you know, bust out the pans and just orgasm everywhere. It's just not the same for me. But with that being said, when I am in the mood, throwing down some steaks or cooking up my Storm breakfast sandwich, which everyone like goes nuts for, things of that nature, I do enjoy. And there is a lot of symbolism in it. There really is. Because it shows that you really care about the person if you're willing to cook them a meal, especially when you're cooking them something that you know they enjoy.
What last bits of advice do you have for people in, you know, starting relationships, or, you know, just to help people who are now in relationships, or advice for future relationships?
Just yourself. Well,
yeah, I agree with Fleeks. Just be yourself, but also for me, never stop trying to lure them, trying to prove how much you love them.
That's a
because
good
if you just give up, if you just give up and think they always will be with you,
if you settle, if you become complacent, yeah, that's not good.
What about you?
I too would agree with the be yourself portion. I can say that with experience, because I was in a relationship where I felt like I couldn't be myself. So it wasn't a healthy relationship, you know? If you can't be yourself in the relationship, you don't belong in that relationship.
You only feel uncomfortable.
Couldn't agree more.
That's, for example, that's something. I know somebody who was in a relationship with a non-furry. It was a.
It was a catastrophe. Fire, flames, everywhere, just explosions. Nobody was happy.
He did not tell her, and she went, like, when she found out, when he finally told her, She was like, yeah, I made her, you're stupid, what is this shit? You know what I mean?
Okay.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
sounds like a
That did not. That relationship did not make it for long.
Because, no, I can't imagine it did.
Yeah, just imagine giving up the furry fandom for a girl. No, no.
No, no.
Not just really. No. Not my thing. Too many friends. Too many friends.
Okay, even the friends portion. The friends portion I can get, but I'm sitting here thinking, like, well, honestly, like, I could probably give up the fandom if, you know, I wanted to, but at the same time, I can't seem to escape it. I've tried. I spent 3 years outside of the fandom, and then it dragged me back in, kicking and screaming.
And now you're doing a furry podcast, man.
God damn it.
The thing is, if you're willing to start giving up things for your partner, eventually, that's a dangerous slope, depending on what it is. Because that's them not allowing you to be yourself.
Yeah.
Now, if your partner's asking you to, like, stop smoking or something for your health, that's a little different, but...
But smoking is part of my identity. It's who I am. I am the Marlboro Man.
You should generally stop smoking. Yeah. That's a good advice in general.
You know what? That's actually what this whole podcast is about. Everything up until this point has been leading into this moment here. Stop smoking.
Stop smoking.
Jeez.
So,
there's nothing left for us to podcast about now, guys. It's over. We're done.
So, yeah.
Well, that was a clever way to use a government grant.
So, are you ready to be creative with me now?
Oh, yeah, baby.
Fliegst du das? So, hier wieder. So, let's create.
The, like, fakest throat clearing sound ever. Hum, hum, hum.
Let's create bird characters together again. You know how it works. I will read different roles, and you have to put a bird species in those.
What bird would you most want to date? Species or character? Cass.
Okay, I restarted. Take two. So let's create bird characters together again, and you know how it works. I will read different roles that you have to put in a bird species in those. And as always, I have a few topic-related roles, or more or less topic-related, let's say it like that. And the first thing, what kind of bird species would be a great couple therapist?
Therapist.
Hmm?
An ibis. Yes.
Okay, explain yourself, please.
Because they're raging alcoholics, and what better bird to help nurture a loving bond than to show a couple what will happen to them 20 years down the line if they don't get their shit together?
Live by my example. I was going to go with Crane. There's something kind of slightly wise, but mostly just pompous about a crane that would make them want to pursue the therapist field, I think. And
I kinda,
now you know my opinion of therapists, but...
I kind of thought of tits.
Bush tits.
The birds. Tits. Yeah, bush tits. Or...
They're small. Why? What would they have to contribute? They're so tiny and...
Just imagine them sitting on a chair...
They actually talk. Here's the thing. Like, Fleeks, they're very peepy. They never stop beeping. They're ideally birds. A therapist needs to sit back and, you know, let the other person talk before speaking.
Yeah, somehow can imagine them sitting in a chair, having their legs, like, crossed, and sitting there with a tiny notebook doing notes. I don't know. I can somehow imagine that. But cranes work well too for that, I guess.
Who would be the host of Love Guru?
Explain what Love Guru is, because
it's a discover relationships, like, you know, really truly discover your partner relationship game show from like the 80s and 90s.
Okay. somehow I have to think of a kookaburra. I don't know why.
We're just but on a stronger kick right now.
A kookaburra would work quite well.
A kookaburra with a leaf on its head. I could actually see it.
I actually really imagine a kookaburra like for all the game shows, you know, like sitting there and being loud and moderating loud. And
they have the natural canned laughter thing kind of going for them. They can laugh on cue. And they're very personality filled. Yet also energetic and can be very angry.
So all game shows will be made by moderated by kookaburras.
There we go. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. That one would probably be another quiet bird. Yeah, what kind of bird would Regis Philbin be?
Who? Why do you call
poor Fleeks?
I can hardly know.
Poor Fleeks flying right over his head. Let's see. Regis Philbin. What kind of Philbin. Bird would be?
Ben.
Yes, Philbin. I don't know. I could see Storm doing a good job with that role. Why not? I'm throwing myself in. Shameless self-promotion.
Okay. I'd like to use a lifeline, please. No. But I haven't used one at all. No.
You haven't earned it yet.
The moderator of Who Wants to Become a Millionaire. That would be...
Actually, you know, if we're naming actual characters... I think of Reg Day, the Hooper. I legitimately do. Like, he kind of circles back to me. Like, I think he could, like, have the kind of regality and, like, poise for that position, but also be clever enough, you know, with
little quips. Rector, who wants to be a millionaire, if he would be in the show as moderator, he's so nice, he would fucking tell them the answer. Oh, by the way, don't choose me. No. Don't do that.
Well, I'm sorry, little one, you couldn't solve the $1,000 question, but you know what? Today's a good day. Take the whole million. Just take it. Just go. You have fun now, okay? Have fun.
Reg Day would be the kind of person. Reg Day would be the kind of person that if you happen to, at the very minimum, call him and use him as a lifeline on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, just hypothetically speaking, and you lost, he would just cut you the check.
He'd also probably be the type of person to be sitting there with Google at ready, waiting for that phone call.
Yeah. Okay, my advice this week, came from Anor Soker. And the advice is this. I'm relatively new to the furry community and would like to get more involved. Any advice for a fellow Griff? Yes, I have plenty of advice for you. But here is the crux of it. You have to get out there, and you have to get out there and start networking yourself. By getting involved in some of the online chat rooms on Telegram and just starting to chirp it up with other furries, etc., that share similar interests, that's a great way to do it. But in my opinion, a relationship truly gets cemented over time by meeting other furs in person, whether that is at a convention or at local fur meets. So going online, researching where the local meets are in your area, ask around, because you'd be surprised. Our fandom is actually quite small, so while many furs may not know where your local meets are, someone will know somebody that knows the link to your local meets website, etc., and can point you in the right direction. If you've never done a furry con, I would definitely recommend at least giving one a shot. Don't go to a massively huge one, as they can be overwhelming at first. Something smaller, such as Indie Fur Con or of that size, right around 1,000 people, is a good starter con.
Even if you're a socialite, start small, because you go to something like AC for your first time, it's overwhelming as shit. I'm still too overwhelmed to go to AC.
That, and the bigger the con is, the harder it is to socialize, so people just split off into cliques of people they already know. Whereas at smaller cons, you have a chance to sit there and go to panels and go to meet and greets of people that, since it's a smaller con, they're less stressed and they're more willing to just actually try spending time with new people. So absolutely worth doing. And when you're at these cons, go to some of the panels, go to the meet and greets, go to the Fursuit Parade, and just put yourself out there. You are not going to make more friends and more genuine relationships spending time behind a glowing screen when you're actually at the convention itself. You have to be out there, you have to socialize, and just be willing to try. And if you're the kind of person that struggles to socialize, listen to conversation, and when you hear something like a topic of interest that you think you can contribute, use that as sort of an icebreaker. That's the easiest way to do it. And literally, just it gets better with practice. You'll start to form friends, and it will grow with time. It really will.
Okay. Thank you for that nice advice. For who was it again?
Anor Soker.
Okay, that was a nice advice, and I totally agree on that. I also got a question from our dear Sable, and yeah, he asks, a friend of mine is an eagle who is falling in love with a lion. They want children. Do you have any advice, Fleeks? Dear Sable, they should adopt a chick. I know it may be exciting to cross your genes with the one you love. I can totally understand that, but make sure they understand the consequences of such a cat-bird union. Think of the future of the kids. Make him clear about that.
Honestly, I mean, you have to look at it this way. Not all birds are as progressive as Fleeks and I.
We will send you the telephone number of the Griffin Relief Society after the show, where your friends can get advice from. They will help both of them to fulfill their wish with reasonable methods.
Dicks.
So thank you so much for your question. I hope I could help you.
Just do it. Just do it and let nature take its course. I'm here. I'll support you.
Storm just elected to pay your child support. You just heard that on there.
Sable probably asked me because he knows I'm reasonable.
Oh, you are a dick.
I love griffins. Okay.
All right. I did get some I got some advice to give as well. So Moriar asks, when I started being a fur back in the late 90s, I wisely started out as a griffin. I later switched to being a ferret, and then to being a corgi. About a year ago, I returned to the flock, and now I am a crow. Do I need to do anything to make up for my lost time or my error?
Ooh.
Well, that's actually a really good question, Moriar, and, you know, it's good to go through an experimental phase. It's good to learn what it feels like to be inferior to birds, because it helps you emphasize with the lesser species and connect with them. But as for rejoining the birddom, don't worry about it. It's very simple. When you pause your avian membership, you don't have to pay your BACO when you rejoin. There is sometimes a $50 application fee, but that's usually waived, especially if you aren't going back into Griffinhood, so don't worry too much there.
Oh, jeez.
Well, they're going full species. They experimented, they learned, and that's encouraged. It's actually a very common part of exchange programs between Birdania and other animal countries. Mm-hmm. You will probably find yourself getting bombarded by past issue magazines of avian culture and stuff like that. There's going to be a lot of new healthcare benefits that you get as well, so expect a lot. Just a lot's going to be happening in your mailbox for the next year and a half, probably. As, you know, you reintegrate yourself into avian society. But other than that, no, welcome back.
Yeah, really? Thank you for that advice.
All right, yeah. What else do we got going on?
Questions, I think, Storm.
Yes, we have a couple of questions here. All right.
I have a question before we get into that.
All right.
What are we drinking today?
I am drinking an Australian brand known as Barista Brothers iced coffee. that I have put a little vodka in.
Oh, then why with the vodka? I hoped that you would take my advice last time and, like, you know, put in some, like, Irish cream or some, you know, rum or something. Like, no, you went with vodka again. Ah, oh, you disappoint me.
Oh my. Well, apparently, you know, you're giving all the advice to join the Griffin Support Society or some shit. So.
That was Fleeks. That was all Fleeks.
Yes, but deep down inside, I heard the voice of Kor coming within him.
Are you implying that Fleeks is my puppet and he dances like I say?
It's hard to tell, but yes, at times. So
it seems like the Griffin Relief Society can't do anything against vodka and coffee. I'm very sorry.
Yeah.
Also, to your question, I'm drinking a Regensburger Spital Strong Ale.
That seems to be your go-to. I'm actually starting to realize that there are familiar words that you keep repeating.
Yeah. It's local breweries. All local.
I'm actually drinking a bitch beer this week. Mike's Hard Margarita.
Ooh, okay. Good stuff.
It is.
I like it.
I have an addiction to margaritas, and Mike's actually makes a pretty good, like, pre-made margarita flavored thing.
Yeah, yes they do.
Okay, back to bird questions.
So,
bird questions. Okay.
Our first question comes from Regday. The question is, what song would you put on to make an evening more romantic?
The Bad Touch by Bloodhound Gang.
Oh man, I I
don't know. I like the original version of that better than the one by the Bad Touch, but it's pretty good. I like anything by Kenny G.
I thought you were going to go with Kenny Loggins for a second there, and I was like, awesome. But no.
Kenny Loggins is pretty good, too. But Kenny G.
I went to the danger zone.
I absolutely do not have an idea because I'm not working that much with music.
You know, truthfully, I don't listen to music during sex either. It feels a little bit too cheesy. I never have.
Yeah. I'm just imagined if he talks about romantic music, this romantic, that's often used in comedy, you know, these do-de-de-de-de-de-de-de. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but if we're talking about songs during sex, I mean, I just throw on some hardcore trance and just go to town.
Oh man. I mean,
I didn't know trance was hardcore. I thought trance was supposed to be like mellow.
No. Trance music can go intense. So.
The kind of music I'm listening to is not, I think, not for romantic, except you're dating somebody you picked up from a metal concert.
It's like, hey, baby, I want to make love to you, so let's blast the windows out while we get ready.
Hey, that's actually not, that can work, really. If you both love the music and you're listening to your, like, favorite guitar solos or your favorite screamer and stuff, and you're like, yeah, man, that part is... Yeah, you can...
Just middle of sex.
Yeah, pretty much.
Not in the middle of sex, but whatever leads to sex, you know?
But, yeah. Starts belching up top of I love you! Da, da, da. Oh, God, it'd be great. All right, next question comes from Eclipse, and that is the following. Who among you has the most impressive mating display?
Not me. That's for sure.
Totally me.
You know what? I actually think I have to give this one to Storm.
Yes, Storm. Oh my gosh.
He sounds a little more intricate than we are. Like, I'm not so fanciful and whimsical. Like,
No, I'm just somebody who gets, like, into relationships by just talking and having, like, same hobbies and stuff and then be like, hey, you know, I kind of feel more than friendship for you thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Storm, I can actually see putting on like a display and like maybe even like some like Aztec dance moves or something going on there.
Yeah, you gotta admit,
you know, combine a beautiful griffin with some sexy moves, and you just got you got the makings of some offspring right there.
I'm not even somebody who dances at parties or something. I actually do not like discos or, you know, discos. Dance.
I would actually totally go to a disco.
Disco is in Germany the term for where you're going to party, you know, the
discotheque?
The discotheque, yeah.
going back to questions.
Yeah.
Okay, next question comes from Morari, and question is a loaded question, and that is, what are griffins missing out on most for lack of a cloaca? That's my thought. Answer for me is nothing, because they've got other holes to replicate what that would do.
I'm wondering about the advantages and disadvantages of both genital
cloacas
systems.
Can't really engage in, like, you know, a unified threesome.
Exactly. So yeah, my advanced answer would be nothing, because the whole griffins have are just superior.
It's okay, we'll just cut this part out.
Yeah.
Anor Soaker asks, who is your biggest bird crush?
Kind of been digging on Cass lately. Like, I know that's really the stereotypical bird answer, but, like, holy shit.
Cass.
Breath of the Wild, yeah.
Freddy's still Falco.
Storm said Falco.
My absolute bird crush, and I bet I can't even imagine not crushing on that. If it goes to fictive characters, it's Ideal Burp. Ideal Burp is such a nice character.
Well, no, I've got to add a griffin response to that too, because if my favorite griffin would be Gilda, I would do bad things to Gilda.
Well,
I keep circling back to bronies. I don't know how it happens.
Welcome to BronyCast. No, please no.
Okay, all right, and our final question is actually a challenge, and the challenge comes from Regday, and the question is, or challenge I should say, is take a well-known movie quote and try to add a bird reference to it.
You know, I was actually thinking about this one earlier, and nothing popped in my mind right away. I'll be back.
Oh, I've got one. So, if you guys are ready, we've all heard of that line from Jurassic Park. So, for me, it would be, that is one great big pile of bird shit.
I know that quote. Yeah. How about something from The Big Lebowski, like, fuck it, dude, let's go chirping.
Take the birds, leave the cannolis.
You're entering a world of griffins.
I keep trying to do a spin on this, but I don't know if it'll work. You come into my home on the day my daughter is to be married, and you ask me to do murder. Has a totally different implication if you're talking about crows.
Not bad.
Not bad at all.
Oh, God.
Forgive us. We are all collectively a little bit tired. Storm just woke up. Fleeks is ready for bed. I've already had like my full day of activities, and I could probably use a nap too.
I could do one if I can get it right. I'm the woodpecker, so that's what you call me. That or his woodpeckerness, or woodpeckeria, or el woodpeckerino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
Do you want to know how I got these scars? Tried to be a woodpecker one day.
Actually, that's one of my favorite was one of my favorite quotes from the movie The Big Lebowski.
Can you feel the car tonight?
Okay, anything else?
I think my quote won.
I think we'll give it to you.
Okay.
Fleeks, wrap us up.
Yeah. I wrap this up and I ask you, would you rather only speak in questions or only speak in movie quotes? Hey, perfect.
Movie quotes.
Well, Fleeks, what do you think I would pick?
I think it would... If you ask me like that, I kind of think you would ask rather asking questions because you're reasonable as I. And
are you sure?
Like always, yeah, I'm sure. And you're already doing it because that's easy, right?
Is it really?
Is it really easier to communicate in questions instead of in movie quotes? But would it be maybe cooler to speak in movie quotes?
I don't know. This is turning into Whose Line Is It Anyway at this point.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Core. All right. Yeah. We all know the movie quotes would be cooler, but Core would just answer everything in questions because, well.
Because I already do.
Isn't he, like, always asking questions already?
Pretty much.
I'm like a 5-year-old. My curiosity is never satisfied.
Was this bird alive? Am I Fleeks? Are you always be beeping?
No, you are the Terminator.
He's doing it.
The Terminator.
Okay, buckle up, because we're about done for this week, and I'm going to hype the show, and I'm going to tell you what kissing the bird can do for you, all in under 30 seconds. Here goes. Check us out on Twitter at BirdLife Podcast, Facebook.com/BirdLifePodcast, Telegram at t.me/BirdLife. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play Music, via the RSS feed, or wherever you poach your podcast from. So long as you're poaching podcasts and not actual wild animals, that's not cool. Also, if you like the show, please kiss the bird. If you go to the website, bird.life, you can click on the cute little Australian magpie, and it'll take you to our Patreon. On our Patreon, if you're willing, please subscribe and donate even just $1 a month. That's $12 a year, or $60 if you do it every month for 5 years. I've had oil change in my bird car cost less than that. What's a bird car? Well, if you were a bird, you'd already know. But seriously, thank you so much for donating, and I really helps keep us going ad-free forever. And done. Thank you, and always be beeping.
Always be beeping?
Stay chirpy, my friends.
What do you got for us?
Oh, my chair broke, but...
Now you.
Yeah, I wanted to...
Is that the curse of this show? I'm like terrified of my chair now that this has happened to both of you.
You're next, Cor. You're totally next.
My arm
this isn't a new
broke.
Chair.
My armrest just broke.
All of the little things that, you know, made me... That made me happy. She kind of... I gotta sneeze, I'm so sorry.
She kind of made him sneeze a lot, yeah.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. Well, she did get a cat, but that was later in the relationship. One of you has a crow in the background that is very vocal.
Sadly, not
this is Australia. I have the window shut with a blanket over it, and you can still hear the damn bird.
Very upset magpie, I'm guessing. Anyways.
Yes, there's magpie out there, there's crow out there, there's...
Have you had a chance to pet a kookaburra yet?
Yes, I have.
God, I want a kookaburra so bad.
Yeah.
They are adorbs. Utterly adorbs. Yeah, and I even saw the trash bird of Australia. It was great. Yes, this the ibis. They don't lie. They motherfuckers come right up to you and will peck the food off your fucking plate.
Is that where you just kind of like grab them by the neck and just hold them there? Like, not necessarily like, you know, choking them, but you just grab them firmly by the neck and just don't let them go?
You just kind of take that, you know, mile and a half long beak of theirs and you smack it away very gently until they walk away.
Stop. 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 Stop.
Oh my god. Oh my god. The winner of the ugliest bird of the year award goes to that annoying asshole ibis. Anyways. Yeah, it's whenever one of us has to leave, you gotta do the hustle. Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, you're supposed to sing and not put the real shit on.
I was feeling a little. I was feeling a little tired, so whatever.
Have you been successful with finding the giant huntsman spider and wrestling the crocodile? At the same time,
I've kept them at a distance, but the huntsman spider is the least of your problems in Australia. The spider you need to worry about is the bird spider.
Yeah, but that's only in the outback, and that's only if you, you know, reach your hand down into holes.
No, they are like bigger than the size of a dinner plate and hang off the side of houses.
Oh,